Now, and this one is called Dinners with Jesus. So for 2 weeks prior to this, we've looked at some transformational table talk around dinner tables in which Jesus was a part. So a couple weeks ago, we began and we looked at what amounted to a fast food meal on the go with Jesus and his disciples in chapter 6. And then last Sunday, we looked at what some might describe as the World Guinness Book of Record potluck meal, where Jesus served 5,000 people and more at a time. And today, we listen in around the table in chapter 11. Something about dinners tend to bring out the best in people. I'm not talking about Scout spaghetti dinner, because you work way too hard to get really involved in conversation around the table. But if you think about family meals or special meals with others, or when maybe co-workers go out together, or perhaps even when you've got your group of friends that gather in the lunchroom around the table, isn't that just like sometimes the best part of the school day, lunch? It was for me. I don't know about you, but it was for me. Because there's a sense of camaraderie, and we tend to help each other to grow and to become better in the process. One of the things that we forgot to do, by the way, and it has to do with dinner, so in our Connect card for this week, which I hope everybody's filling out, there's some very good things on the front and the back which you may check or circle that you might be interested in. But one that we forgot to put on the back concerns tables of grace. And I'm not Marty Rogers. I don't do a good a job of explaining this as she is. But I do want to mention that we will be starting something soon called Tables of Grace. And we're going to start contacting people this week. And what it is gives us a chance to say, hey, I'd like to sit around with some people from Grace at a table and just to get to know one another. Because you can't develop those relationships in a worship service looking at the back of someone's head and this ugly face week after week after week. But around a table, transformational table talk happens. So if you have not yet checked that box or circled that piece, just write it in for me. If you'd like to be a part of Tables of Grace, either just to sit around a table once a month for 2 or 3 months with some people and just get to know them, please do that. Also, if you would like to host, you might write that in as well. Enough for the plug for Tables of Grace, but that's a good place to talk about it. So as we get to this particular passage in the book of Luke, we find Jesus has been invited, and in a sense we are as well, invited to dinner by a very religious, very sincere Pharisee. And I wonder what the table talk will be today. I wonder what that transformational table talk might do to me. I wonder how that table talk might influence you. And I really can't wait to see how that transformational table talk might influence and impact and transform our community. So as we get into it, just a little backstory. Earlier, Jesus had been really giving it to the people, telling them that their walk was not matching their talk, that there were so many things that they could be doing better. And you kind of picture Jesus as the man of love, like, wow, he's getting on their case. Why is he doing that? I think we do try to correct those that we love, right? And then this certain Pharisee hears about Jesus, maybe he heard Jesus teaching, or one of the people that came to synagogue told him about this. And as we understand the role of Pharisees in that biblical culture, we understand that they were religious leaders who were responsible for shining the light of their faith and living their faith in such a way that everybody knew they loved God. So I'll give them credit for this. Pharisees had a lot wrong with them. But I'll tell you this, they had rituals and mannerisms and ways of dressing and things like that that pointed to them. And they said, I am standing in front of you and I am trying to follow God. They were very bold and very brave in that. They also created many rules about how they were going to do this, so much so that sometimes the rules became more important than the reasons behind the rules. This particular Pharisee, I believe, if we read it, is very sincere. He's heard of Jesus. He invites him to a dinner party, and maybe he's truly interested in what Jesus says. I don't see anything in this passage that we find in some others where Jesus is invited to a religious person's dinner and they're always trying to trick him or keep an eye on him or find him making a mistake. In this case, it looks like he either just wants to entertain and be in the presence of Jesus, or maybe this guy wants to learn from him. He's honest. And he is a Pharisee, and the Pharisees were all about holiness. They wanted to live right. They wanted to live clean lives devoted to God. That's why they had all those rules. They didn't want to mess up. So this sincere guy trying to stay with God says, this new teacher needs to come to dinner. And he knows he doesn't always follow the rules. He doesn't always do things the way that their religious culture says. But he says, I'm going to have him at my table. And the first thing Jesus does is he comes into the room and he bypasses the ceremonial washing basins. He doesn't wash his hands ritually. And he sits down and begins to eat the meal with everybody else. Jesus didn't wash his hands before supper. Gross. That's bad. My grandmother one time, who lived in a different town, came to visit with us and grew up on a farm. We had a large number of animals, including a lot of dogs. So we fed the dogs out of a 5-gallon bucket, and we saved a lot of table scraps. My turn to feed the dogs, and I had the dog food and table scraps in the bucket, and I poured some milk in there that was left over, and I grabbed the wooden spoon out of the cup on the top of the counter, and I started stirring up those table scraps. My grandmother walked in and said, "Ah! That's gross! Why are you using your mother's wooden spoon in that nasty bucket of whatever?" I said, "Grandma, we can wash it." She, in her reality, you don't do that. You don't contaminate that spoon with table scraps and dog food. That's right. It's contaminated. But in my culture, no big deal. We're going to throw it in the dishwasher. It'll be fine tomorrow. No big deal. So the deal here isn't that Jesus didn't really clean his hands, that he was going to, you know, touch the bread or do something to make somebody sick. What Jesus did is he didn't ritually wash his hands in a certain way. And there was, believe me, a certain way. There's like 13 steps or something to ritually wash your hands before a communal meal. He didn't just do it wrong. He just skipped it. I begin to think that maybe Jesus did that on purpose. First thing the Pharisee does is he realizes this and says, "Jesus, what are you doing? You didn't ritually purify yourself before this meal. Do you realize what you're doing?" He was surprised, really, really surprised. And Jesus uses that point to kind of give it to them like they needed to hear it. He began to talk to them about how this is me and a meal, but what about you folks who spend so much time coming up with all these rules and living according to these rules, making your life on the outside look so clean when we know that you're greedy? Because there was some stuff going on in the community at the time with the Pharisees. And inside, we know that you are full of greed. We see that you even give away a tenth of all the little spices. Not only do you tithe the money you make, but all the tiniest little things that you get out of your garden, which they didn't even have to do that. You go above and beyond to tithe your mint and your dill and your cumin, whatever you've got growing in your garden. Even give a tenth of that to God. But you don't pay attention to the poor and the needy and those who are hurting. You should do the poor and the needy and those who are hurting and do all those other things. You see, what the Pharisees were seeking was a clean life, unstained from sin and unstained from things that are not godly, and so they tried to withdraw and to and to stay as clean as they possibly could. Jesus points out the fact that in your effort to stay clean on the outside, you've neglected to look at the inside. And isn't that what really matters? The person on the inside. The life that we live when no one is looking and only God and you can see how you live. In fact, as I look at their struggle, I think we all kind of want to live a clean life. I know that I did want to clean that wooden spoon. I know that when I was a scout, we had a favorite camp spot in Wayne County. Actually, it was in Johnson County, North Carolina. We called it Hog Falls. And when you're in the flatlands of eastern North Carolina, to see a waterfall is an amazing thing. It was like 10 feet high. We would go there and play and camp and just have a wonderful time. And every time we went, it rained. So we go to Hog Falls, as you guys full well know, you come back, you're just muddy, you're wet, you're nasty. But it didn't keep us from going because we knew we could come back and we could get cleaned up. There's two ways that you can get clean. There's the Pharisee's way, which is to avoid everything and to come up with all these rules that would keep you from getting clean. If the Boy Scouts were going to camp out, they could say, first step is you must put on your hermetically sealed suit that will keep you from contacting any dirt, any germ, or anything like that. Just put on your bubble. That would work really well when you jump in the canoe, wouldn't it? That would work really well. Let's see, y'all got some really high, exciting things I saw coming up. Marksmanship training. Aren't you going like flying or something like that? Is that on your calendar? Yeah. I could see you taking those suits and packing all in a small plane. That would not work. All these rules about how to keep from getting your life dirtied. I want to read everybody something that these folks may have already read from the Scout Handbook. This is part of the Scout Law as it describes the Scout Law. Where it says a scout is clean. A scout is clean. A scout keeps his body and mind fit. He chooses the company of those who live by high standards, and he helps keep his home and community clean. It says that there's no way to camp or hike, to be outdoors and not get dirty. Getting dirty is half the fun, et cetera, goes the Scout Handbook. And then it asks the question, if it's not dirt, earth, and grime that make a scout dirty, what does? It's the things that we think and the habits and the behaviors that accumulate in our lives. And they are so much harder to clean away than the dirt on our skin or in our clothes. The last thing in that section of the Scout Handbook, it says, associating with other people that demonstrate clean minds and hearts is the best way to keep clean. So hanging out with the right crowd. I want to say there's no better crowd to hang out with than those who are seriously trying to follow Jesus. There's no better crowd to hang out, no better person to hang out with than Jesus himself. You see, there was two ways to be clean. The Pharisees' way was to avoid all kinds of contamination. And in so doing, it was easy. It was really easy to work on the outside. But then the hard work of working on cleaning the inside tended to get left behind. So much so that it would actually cause people to become very hypocritical. So that their walk doesn't match their talk. So their thoughts do not match their words. And in every culture around the world, that is the one thing that everyone tries to avoid, is being hypocritical. But the more rules you build up and the more you polish the outside, the easier it is to become hypocritical and to be a hypocrite. In fact, Jesus in verse 44 tells those Pharisees, you don't know it, but you're becoming just like what you seek to avoid. You see, they had this deal going down in Jerusalem where that city had been around so long, there were actually graves from previous generations that were unmarked all over the place. And their rule said, if you touch a dead person or come within so many feet of a grave or stand on it or touch it, then you're ritually unclean. No one else can touch you, and you can't go to worship for 7 days. And they're going like, we got a problem here. There's all these empty graves. People are walking around, and they're ritually unclean, and they don't even know it. I'm kind of thinking, well, how do you know it? But that was such a big deal that the Pharisees started a movement to identify all the unmarked graves so that they could then mark them and people could avoid them and keep themselves ritually clean. And Jesus, knowing all this, says to him, you've become like that unmarked grave. For wherever you go and the people come in contact with you, then they go away unclean as well. You've been contaminated by trying to polish the outside and not clean the inside of your cup of your life. The other way, in contrast to the Pharisees, is Jesus' way. Jesus sounds like the Scout Handbook. Jesus says there's no way you can keep from getting dirty in this life. It just won't happen unless you totally withdraw. Paul in the book of Romans tells us to be in the world but not of the world. Live your life. You can associate and be around people who aren't the best people in the world, but you don't have to take on their character and their nature. See, Jesus' way is to actually clean the lives of all that he touches. Whereas the Pharisees and their legalism and their rituals kind of tainted people and turned them away from that kind of love that is born out of the love of God, Jesus meets you where you are. And all of us, if we really look deep inside, there's some things within us that maybe we're kind of hypocritical about, that we're so glad nobody else can see. And then we realize, oh man, now I can see it. God, I know you can see it. I'm not proud of it. But if we keep the mask on, if we keep polishing the outside, maybe we'll feel better because other people don't know about it. But see, Jesus is the one who forgives and transforms lives. He says, work on the inside of your cup. And see, I think when we do that, then we find the power to be freed from all that stuff that we don't like on the inside. And we can live transparently. We can, the inside of the cup and the outside begin to match, you see. That's all what God does in us. There's a story about an older businesswoman raised in a very strict lifestyle and worked hard, did everything right. Kind of like my grandmother, just had certain rules of etiquette you're supposed to follow. She's traveling. She's in an airport. And she goes to the vending machine and gets one of those little tubes of Oreos, you know, like maybe 5 Oreos altogether. She puts them in a briefcase with her newspaper. And she sits down with those really hard, nasty plastic chairs that are always in the airport. She sits down in the chair, and there's like almost a coffee table kind of table in front of her. She lays her stuff down, pulls out her Oreos, pulls out her paper, begins to look through her calendar. And then a young man comes up, and he's wearing like an army jacket, long stringy hair, and he plops his duffel thing down. He sits across from her. He starts flipping through his phone. Well, the lady says, I am hungry. So she reaches down, she opens the Oreos, lays them out, you know, just has the open package there. She takes one and she eats it. She starts to look through her paperwork, and she sees movement out of the corner of her eye. That kid's leaning forward, that young man's leaning forward, and she sees his hand reach for her stuff in the middle of that table. His fingers grab a black Oreo, pick it up, and put it in his mouth. He eats her Oreo. And she looks at him face to face, and he's glaring at her. How rude is that? That is so bad. What is going on with the young people of today? So she glares back and she grabs another Oreo. He looks at her. He turns his head, looks around, looks down, flips through his phone, grabs another cookie. As you can see how this is going, she said, well, this is going to end of this. This kid does not know what he's doing. I'm going to be civil. I'm just going to grab all the rest of the Oreos, and I'm going to eat them. She stuffs them in her mouth. Done. She's finished the Oreos. End of sentence. She can't wait to get away from this crude, rude young man with the stringy hair. So she does. She said, I'm just going to move. So she picks up her papers. She puts them in a briefcase. She picks up her newspaper. She stuffs it in her newscase, and she looks down, and there's her pack of Oreos. You get my drift. How many Oreos of his did she eat, I wonder? See, sometimes we've got to look at ourselves and stop looking at others. And that's what Jesus is inviting these Pharisees to do. So what Jesus is really inviting us, because we all have stuff on the inside that doesn't match what's on the outside. Look inside, my friend. Jesus says, I love you. Look inside and look for those things that you know I think are beautiful. Look for those things that you know look ugly and dark and harmful. And give them to me. Let me take them away. Let me start you new. Let me transform your life. I got to thinking about it early enough this week that on your Connect card, there's a couple of things that you might want to do because of what you just heard Jesus say. One of these bullets, it's the second bullet on the back of your Connect card, says this, and I know it's wordy. Beginning now, I will be sure to include in my prayer time a time of reviewing my recent actions for evidence of hypocrisy and ask God's forgiveness and his help in future. I don't know how you pray. I sure hope you do pray. But one of the hardest things to do is to say, God, help me see every bit of me. Help me to look within. And when you do that and God begins to show you how you are through his eyes, the beauty as well as the not so beautiful, and you offer that to God, I guarantee you, he will cleanse your life, clean you on the inside, that will lead to a beautiful cleansing on the outside. And you won't have to worry about etiquette and manners, because all you do will truly be transparent and without hypocrisy. There's also another thing on the back of that Connect card. Sometimes we need help seeing the real person. And I've had friends do this for me, accountability, prayer partners and such as that. If you check the middle box, you just do that for your own good. I'm not going to like have somebody call you and say, hey, are you praying introspectively now that you check that on your box? We're not going to do that. However, if you check that third block, it says you might want someone that you could develop a trust relationship with so that you could work together to help each other clean the inside of the cup. I will connect back with you, especially if at least two people do, because I will try to connect the two of you together. Sometimes we need somebody. In the Old Testament, David had Nathan, and Nathan was a prophet. And David did something very bad. Nathan told him a story about someone who stole a sheep. And then he says, that's what you've been doing with Bathsheba. And he got it. And he repented and he turned and he changed. My friends, may we, especially as we get even closer to the season of Lent, begin looking within and looking up to look out to a much better and brighter life. To God be the glory.